This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, let's go around the NFL here in loop on Sports Radio 610. B. Scott in for the OG, John Lopez, which served us pretty well last segment in our question of the day, asking about what are you most shameless about? And I do love that everybody has jumped in here. I do want to circle back around to the varsity high school football player who said that they broke an opponent's arm because their opponents were laughing at a teammate. It was their brother.
A little insane. Oh, okay.
They did it for their literal brother.
Okay.
So all that right. Adds a different level. It wasn't all just right. Like my teammate, my brother as a teammate. You know how we doing football?
No, this he's was
like,
my brother's keeper type.
This is my blood.
Okay, I got you.
Like, ain't nobody laughing at my brother except for me. So there was that. And then also, I want you to understand, I have great personal appreciation for all the folks that are trying to put me onto delicious drinks, because that is what I'm here for. The last thing I want is to pay all this money for alcohol, for alcohol, sometimes I'll call it, for it to be scrunching my face up. You know what I mean?
Like we accept the unintended consequences of the question of the day.
Yes.
We do accept it.
That's right.
If it means we get better drinks, better Rolodex of go-tos, then we'll take it.
Nothing makes me more mad than when I get an old-fashioned and it tastes like it's made with 86 octane.
Ooh.
That kills me. So anyways, let's go around the NFL here.
But shout out to that question of the day, not being inspired by John Lopez, but very much having a John Lopez feel. What are you most shameless about?
That's right.
Yeah.
Like, that could have easily been in the spirit of John Lopez not being here today.
Sure.
So I love that.
That's not where it came from at all. All right. Let's go around the NFL now, where I want to jump right to this because I just have this as a fascinating kind of thing for me. Peter Schrager, now with the ESPN, was kind of talking about the NFL and their endless growth in a roundabout way, because it's been kind of hypothesized that the NFL is looking to possibly, with all of the international games that they're having, whether it's Brazil and Spain and Germany, and finding more and more places to play football games. Don't we have Australia on the docket here?
I believe so.
Like, they are going everywhere, man. Name a country and it feels like they have a possibility of playing a football game there at some point. And with all these international games, it feels like they're moving towards a place where they're going to get themselves an international package of games, sell that off as its own entity, and, you know, bring more revenue in to the National Football League, what is the biggest sports league in America. Except the international package, it feels reasonable to think that that would be in that space where we're seeing a lot of these international games, right? That 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock a.m. that leads into that time period. And it flows kind of nicely into what has been our typical noon schedule, early afternoon, late evening, what have you.
It gives you all-day football.
But what it would do also is that it would step upon your broadcast partners that you already have in their pregame shows. Now, it's worth remembering that Peter Schrager, before he moved to ESPN, he also worked on Fox's pregame show and that type of stuff. And I found it to be interesting. He pointed to the idea that you'd rather watch any football game than a pregame show talking about other games, which is fair. But he said, you know, that would absolutely hamper that. Do you think that that would be something that, like, would be an issue for these partners, the CBSs, the Foxes of the world? Because they put a lot of money into that, and you know they make a lot of money, especially advertising-wise, in those periods of the pregame shows that last for, a few hours every Sunday.
Yeah, so it's a conundrum because it's an obvious issue in stepping on the pregame show or on the other broadcast partner's time, if you will. I will say, so from a business standpoint, that's something that they would have to figure out, and I'm not exactly sure what the answer is for them. Like, that's a true conundrum. I will say from a fan perspective, I think the point that Peter Schrager is making is the correct one. And I would even go further to say, even without this conflict, if you will, that sometimes these pregame shows and all of this pregaming of the game is a little much. And I'm saying this as somebody who's in media and 100% loves both the sport and the media around the sport.
Sure.
I am personally here for all of it. And even with that, I feel like it's a little bit overkill. I feel like it's overkill with the NFL. I feel like it's overkill with college football. Just with even with the NBA right now.
Take that, Pat McAfee.
I don't feel like we need
hold that, Reese Davis.
2 hours, 3 hours necessarily worth of pregame. Now, does it help you get in the spirit, help you get in the flow? Do a lot of these places do a bang-up job with the production and the quality of these pregame shows? 100%. But is it necessary? Do we need it? Like, what I'm wondering is, do they at some point, aside from, or maybe as they're trying to decide what these business decisions are that they're going to have to make, at one point do they decide how much of this is fat? And at what point do we cut the fat? How much fat are we cutting? That's going to be an interesting sort of thought exercise for them.
Inexact science, or inexact poll of sorts on the YouTube page, on the text line. Multiple people saying, nah, I don't mind. You know, I'd much rather watch a game than watch, you know, people talking about the games, which I think Schrager, you're right. Like, Schrager's probably spot on that. One of the things I do wonder is, have we reached so much of a media mass where those pregame shows aren't necessary? Or do we still have a relatively casual fan base still within there that you don't want to ignore that probably gets a majority of their NFL news going into the game right then? And are you losing that? Or also, and this is me personally, as somebody who also loves the sport and the media around it, it could just be too much on the, we are here all day. Like, I'm already here from noon to 11, basically. Like, what does it change if we now have that consistent 8 to 11 feel? And I ain't talking about 3 hours, right? What does that do? I don't know. But those are kind of some of the things I thought around the international.
It just feels like you're going up against that thing that a lot of us, even in this, in our own industry, where attention is divided and the options are just way more plentiful of things that you can do with your time. So let's say you are interested. I can even personalize this in a way. I'm interested in a game. I want to watch this game, but there's only so many hours in the day. And I also say want to watch this show, right? And I've got all this more access to different shows,
sure,
whether
yeah.
it's HBO Max, Netflix, Peacock, whatever it is. I got a show that I want to fit in here. Well, as opposed to watching a pregame show, I feel like I'm already prepped for the game. And even if I'm not, I'm going to watch the game anyway. Let me take this extra 30 right. minutes, this extra hour and a half of time that I've got, this extra 2 hours of time that I've got to knock out a Righteous Gemstones before this game starts, to knock out this documentary that I'm watching on Twitter before this. Like, whatever it is, I got time to do that. So I think between having more options and attention being divided, at some point, like, even if what you're saying is true and you still got a casual enough fan base to where there's some utility to the pregame show, I feel like you got more options to where you don't necessarily need it.
I appreciate there being one more person with me who's like, I'm really not trying to get up any earlier on Sunday for a pointless game. I imagine that the game would not be pointless, especially as you get more and more of them international. We can't just outsource only bad ones,
yeah,
right? Like, eventually we have to outsource some good ones,
too. That's going to depend on the game, right? Like, that's going to, like, what if it's your team that's playing in the game? What if it's one of your division opponents that's playing in the game that's either right on your heels or you're right on theirs, and you want to see what if that's your opponent the next week and you want to school yourself a little bit on what that team did the week before? Like, there are a lot of reasons to watch a game at a time, you know, at a time frame that you don't want to. So they'll find a way. They'll find a way to reel you in for that early game.
All right, so as we continue around the NFL here, we're around that time period of the NFL schedule where teams have to decide on fifth-year options. Even though, shout-out to, was it Andrew Berry? Is that the general manager up there?
In Cleveland?
Yeah, where apparently he did not realize that. Like, he was asked about whether how he was feeling about Kenny Pickett. Fifth-year option, and they was like, well, you know, I don't have to worry about that. That was something that you worried about over there. It's like, no, dog, like, that's not after the third year, before the fourth year.
Yeah, I love how he's like, man, I ain't even thought about Kenny Pickett.
He's like, I don't need to worry about that.
We brought him in, but we ain't even gave no thought to his contract. Fifth-year option, Smith-year option.
That's right.
We ain't worried about that.
When it comes down to it, I mean, we know Derek Stingley Jr., you're figured out there. They have a long-term extension. What interests me is that there's some teams, and I mean, we could talk about the ones whose fifth-year options were picked up, but that's obvious, right? The Chris Olave, Jameson Williams, Jordan Davis, Kyle Hamilton, just players that you know are capable and good enough that you want to keep them on a relatively reasonable, relatively affordable contract while you go. The ones that are interesting are the ones that are declined. Where you can obviously point to, eventually, they got around, Cleveland did, to not picking up, not exercising that fifth-year option for Kenny Pickett, Evan Neal, for the Giants, that tackle. You knew that those ones would be there because they have not played up to the level where you want to pay them at the same level of that fifth-year option, even if you want to return them. The ones that I got, I found to be interesting. There is a center for the Baltimore Ravens, Tyler Linderbaum.
Yeah, I saw that.
He did not have his fifth-year option picked up. He was a 25th pick back in 2022. Was it 2022?
Yes, it would have to be. Yeah, it would have to be for that draft class.
Right. It'd be a $23 million option. And maybe you go, okay, well then, has he not been that good? He's been a crucial part of their offensive line. In fact, three seasons as a starter, and the Ravens have literally finished second, first, and first in rushing yards. Obviously, it's a point of emphasis for them, both with their quarterback and now with the running back. And they took a center who they drafted, and it feels like, especially in this league where good offensive linemen, you don't have to tell Texans fans, but good offensive linemen aren't easy to come by. They were like, I don't know if we want this relatively affordable fifth-year option.
I think the thing is with that, too, I think if they would have picked up that option, he would have been, I guess, he would have been the number one paid center. And I think the other paid center was like at 18 or something like that. And they did mention they definitely are trying to keep him for sure. But I guess it didn't make sense money-wise to pick up that option if he was trying to work up a contract anyway.
It's the only way that it makes sense is if that the exactly what Figgy said, that the fifth-year option is more expensive or prohibitive to them than whatever long-term deal they actually work out. Because everything that you mentioned is true. Like, think about it. And all those names that you rattled off, the Kyle Hamiltons, Jordan Day, Kyle Hamilton on this exact team, the
George Karloftis.
Yeah, all of these guys. Well, Tyler Linderbaum, for his position, is right along those lines of quality of player. You're talking about a Pro Bowler of the last 2 years, and then his first season, he was an all-rookie guy, you know, from the Football Writers. So, I mean, he's been productive since day one. You got to think that this is somebody, and especially the Ravens. This is not the Browns, by the way. No offense again, Figgy, but this is a team.
Figgy's like, stop associating me with them.
I don't work for the Browns.
I'm just saying, every time I say it, I feel like I got a Cleveland guy in here. But
I do not own the Browns, man.
When I want to give you the, you know, exhibit A of poorly run franchise, I can't help but keep going back there. But this is their division foe. This is the Baltimore Ravens that knows what they're doing.
Where do they fall in the power rankings of I got to come back to that.
Maybe not the worst, but an easy one to kind of just lean on and to sort of default back to. But again, Tyler Linderbaum, a part of this organization and has been productive since he got there, you got to figure that that's somebody that they're working on a long-term deal, even though it is unusual to see a guy like that not get his fifth-year option.
I was actually shocked that if they did pick that option up, he would have been the highest-paid center just off of that rookie deal. I'm like, damn, I ain't realize how many centers – wasn't really, I don't want to call him underpaid, but I didn't realize the highest paid was like at 18.
Yeah, that's Creed Humphrey.
Yeah, but it does go to show you, like, they more than likely are working on a long-term deal, and it's one that's probably going to come relatively soon, because to me, the fifth-year option, the benefit of it is also gives you enough time to sort of
work
something out and kind of kick the can down the road a little bit. Of course, the franchise tag allows you to do that as well. But it tells me they are either franchise tagging this guy or, quite simply, working on a
long-term deal. They're probably going to get him around 19, 20 mil instead of that 24.
Yeah, especially when they're already paying the quarterback. Kyle Hamilton's going to get paid. You know, they got other guys.
You're trying to get a long-term deal anyway, so ain't no point in picking that option up.
Right. 3-4-6, Browns already eliminated from the playoffs. Sorry, Figgy. I like this bit.
Hey, that's not my squad, man. My name is not Jimmy Haslam. Yeah,
the Browns finna run the first 4 QB formation that we ever seen in the NFL. They got 17 guys.
Hey, I was like, can they make that happen?
That's gonna be a hell of a training camp.
Yeah, because the problem is you don't even got no Logan Thomases over there. You're like, hey, line up at tight end, or you don't got any.
They got 17.
You don't got any Terrell Pryors. Like, hey, go right. Want to run some routes of wide receiver?
Hey, they got 17 quarterbacks, and the most athletic one is the one with two bad Achilles.
Yeah.
And not available to play for them.
That's what I was like.
And the reason why they did load up on all these quarterbacks to begin with.
What a very stupid organization. Not a stupid organization by any means as we're wrapping up around the NFL. I was talking about fifth-year options. The fifth-year option on Kenyon Green, now a Philadelphia Eagle, not exercised. So I'm interested to see because, like, this is reclamation attempt. And I guess it makes sense, right? No need to assume or no need to agree to pay more money to this man that you don't know if you're going to be able to get more talent out of him, or production is really the way I should say that. But it does make it make me feel like, hey, you're back in the Mekhi Becton situation where if he does pan out, you're probably going to have to pay him fairly well.
Yeah, it's wild the difference a year makes. He went into last year with the starting job, whether you think he won it or they just gave it to him because of who he was in his draft position and the investment in him. But he goes into last year with the Texans with a starting job, goes into this year with the Eagles basically fighting for his career. Basically fighting for his career in the NFL, period, right? Like, this is a reclamation year, but it's a contract year. Whatever happens this year will determine whether he's even in the league next year or not. In 2026, I mean.
Right, and no assurances beyond it because no fifth-year option for him. So there you go. Around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Also, just a little note, we're 2 weeks out from the schedule release, if that is of any value to you. May 14th. I know that came out a little bit ago, but I don't think I've said it officially.
Over the years, we've done events for it, man. It's a big thing around here, so I can't wait for it. I don't know what we do. We'll talk to Parker, but at some point, but I'd like to do something. You know what I mean? Like, let's make it a party. Let's have some fun with it.
I like what you're doing here. All right, and well, so that's coming down the pike. All right. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, Nick Caserio has been talking after the draft, including talking to the lovely Kay Adams. Let's hear what he had to say next. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atatulin. Figgy Fig rounds out the bunch on this Thursday. Hope you're having a good one, someone said. Wouldn't be surprised if Kenny Green makes his way back to Houston. Roughnecks might need him.
Oh, why y'all doing, man.
Why y'all doing that?
I was thinking from here, you know, Atascocita. Yeah, I was thinking he's going to make his way back to Houston. He lives here.
I was thinking a camp body, maybe next year, free sign as a camp body for cheap.
I was thinking go see his mama and them. You know, drop it on
yours
the
is more disrespectful. You trying to play it like it's not. You like, yeah, of course he's going to be. He's just flying to IAH, you know, go see his people.
Yeah, but mine's not
stop
a joke.
Stop by some French.
That's not a joke. That's like actually real life. This dude talking about go play for the Roughnecks. I see what you doing there.
I mean, they'll pay him to play football. Not a lot, but they'll pay him.
All right, I was right, though, fighting for his career. I mean, look, we're joking, but that's what this year is for him. Getting that fifth-year option decline, fighting for his career.
Yeah.
Hope he does well.
Absolutely. I mean, the dude himself, I have no reason or occasion to be nasty towards him.
He tried. I thought he was a good worker, had a good attitude. It just didn't work out.
I will say, if it don't work out in Philly and he's playing a lot,
that's tough.
I'm going to feel bad for them Philly fans. I mean, not him, not the Philly fans, but I'm going
to
feel bad
what
for him.
Do to
him. Oh, man. They are crazy,
they're
man.
You traded C.J. Gardner-Johnson for this?
They're not good people.
Oh, no.
Get this bum out of here.
But it is a good circumstance for him, right? Going and working with Stalin there.
You got like, the best coaching.
If there's a place where it's going to happen, it feels like it'll be there. All right. Let's talk more about this offensive line and some other things that Nick Caserio has talked about. He's doing a little media tour himself. He'll be on this station next week with Painter Pendergast. Keep it locked to find out when exactly next week. But, you know, he was actually on Up and Adams, the show with Kay Adams, and I mean, for one, my man was bubbly. My man was having a good time talking on a show.
I understand it.
And so,
just saying.
Well, you know, Kay Adams,
I'd be in a good mood, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was various things that he talked about. Can you give me the first one? This is Caserio talking on the Up and Adams about the DB room that he has established with this Texas team.
It really is.
So wait, let me grab it.
All right, no problem. But yeah, so there's that. But also remember, he was on Texas All Access earlier on the week as well.
Yeah, been a talkative Nick Caserio lately.
He's gotten very comfortable with the role in general, and also like talkative and willing to show his emotions even more so. Like the frustration that he's willing to display, it is an emotion, and he is willing to show it to us.
Yeah. So I even go back to it started for me like with Lovie Smith when they fired Lovie Smith. And he kind of had this moment where he's like, hey, the clock is ticking, and is probably as transparent or as emotionally transparent as I think he's had ever been up until that point. And ever since then, you've seen a little bit more of Nick Caserio, not the robot, but the human being.
Yeah. And so he's given us some of that. Actually, you know what? Let me call a little audible here. And I hope that, well, we know there's probably an opportunity to have more audibles with C.J. Stroud this year with the offense. But one of the things I have been clamoring for is to find out a little bit more about this offense and what it'll be. And if there's anyone who might be able to get it out of football players and football people, it is Kay Adams. I view her as the Taylor Rooks of football, where people might talk
about
the
white Taylor Rooks.
Well, I didn't need to say, we didn't need to put it in those terms.
Look at Ficky, had to go, the white Taylor, you had to make sure you made that difference.
Yeah, I don't think you needed to do all that.
Hey, I don't see it being wrong.
And to be fair, Taylor Rooks does have her own football space with the Prime on Thursdays, Prime Video broadcast. But this was Kay Adams asking, what do I need to know about Nick Caley as he comes in to coach this offense?
That he's a good coach and he went to a great college, so that's where it ends. So no, he's an awesome human being. It's interesting, his background's a little bit different. He started on the defensive side of the ball and coached for a number of years on the defensive side of the football, and then when we brought him to New England and hired him as an offensive assistant, that was the first time he'd kind of worked on the offensive side of the ball. So I'd say he's pretty well versed. He's worked for a number of really good coaches, Coach Belichick, being involved with Coach McDaniels, Josh, when he was in New England, had an opportunity to work with Sean over the last couple of years. So I'd say brings kind of a wealth of experience in a couple of different systems. So what we have to do, what he's going to focus on and concentrate on, is putting together the Houston Texans offense and what do we need to do to be successful. But a tremendous human being that's got a lot of juice, got a lot of energy. He doesn't have as much energy as Sean, which nobody does, but being around Sean is probably never a bad thing.
Yeah.
Did you get some from that?
Yeah. For me,
you can say no.
I'm going to be honest. In the beginning, I'm like, yep, this is a Nick Caserio guy. Like, I'm not trying to be the one that, like, divides up, is this a Nick Caserio hire or D'Amico Ryan's hire? Is this the ownership? But look, it's hard to ignore. And this is my takeaway from just his first jokingly comments to start that answer. This dude's resume is pretty much, he is Nick Caserio. Like John Carroll,
yeah.
New England Patriots. And I get it, it differs a little bit after that, but it's like, Nick Caserio basically hired Nick Caserio to be the offensive coordinator, up to the point to where the man's name is Nick and last name starts with a C.
It's kind of the same after that, too. Like, just seeing all the different positions. Like, he started on the defensive side of the ball, and then he went to the offensive side of the ball. Nick Caserio was like a receivers coach at one point. He was kind of all over the place, too.
Caserio coached receivers. This guy coached tight ends. It's like,
it's kind of the same thing.
Just come in and try to fit in wherever you think you can fit in that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it continues to talk about, like, the different systems and then just building the Texans offense. And I'm trying to be encouraged by it. And I think also knowing that C.J. Stroud is deeply involved, and then the guy that probably knows him the best on the staff is also deeply involved in Jerod Johnson, I find it hard to shake, B. Scott, the feeling that they're just figuring this out on the fly, which does not give me a lot of confidence in what the offense ultimately looks like. And what's crazy is I feel confident about the tools. I feel confident about the quarterback. I'm trying to find some confidence about what the offensive line looks like, and I just don't know what is the actual frame or form of how you're putting all these pieces together.
Or even more simply, like when Nick Caserio there says building the Texans offense, what does that mean?
You're going to run the football.
No idea.
Like, we're
going to run the football.
It would be more, you would be more comfortable with, I think. And it would give you more confidence if he was just coming in here with an offense. Like, this is what the offense is going to be. Either that being, hey, this is this guy's offense, or this guy is capable of running whatever offense we already have and we want to go with it. Now, we understand they're gutting the offense that they already had. They fired the previous offensive coordinator and they're bringing in a different guy. But if it was one or the other, hey, this is somebody that is just going to orchestrate an offense that we've already got in place and we know that's going to be the offense, or this guy has an offense. We know, like, this is Kyle Shanahan. This is Sean McVay. And it doesn't have to be that kind of name, but somebody with an identified offense you would feel better about. We don't know what a Nick Caley offense actually is or looks like, and that is an uncomfortable place to be in considering where they were offensively.
And you know what? I'd be okay with the ambiguity of we don't know what a Nick Caley offense looks like. I don't know if Nick Caley knows what a Nick Caley offense looks like. And that's the thing that I continue to bandy about in some way.
Doesn't it seem like to you, like, I mean, I'm asking this genuinely, doesn't it seem like to you it has that feel of we're bringing in a smart offensive guy who is going to kind of read the room, check with C.J. Stroud, check with Jerod Johnson, the people that have been here already, what's already working, what do you already like, and we'll form an offense based off of that feedback, based off of what is it that C.J. Stroud and the people that are already here that know C.J. Stroud,
What does it look like? And that, I mean, that's good, I guess, because, you know, you want to play to your quarterback strengths, but it's also not that great because you want to feel like the guy that's coming in already has a plan or that you already have some kind of direction.
It's great in theory, though. Like, and and this has been kind of my general, and I'm trying not to freak out because I know that I have a propensity to get to that space.
It's going to be fine, right? Reggie. It's going to be fine.
I'm trying not to freak out. But like,
or is it?
Okay. I didn't need that. That's not helpful in this moment. But I feel like you look at the offenses that have jumped off the page, how many of them have gone in without you having some understanding of what the foundation will be of it, right? Of even the ones that are coming from a system, right? When, oh, well, let's go get Kevin Stefanski. He has this base. Let's go get Kevin O'Connell. He has this base. Let's get Zach Taylor. He has this base. Let's go get, what's my boy in, Black Mike. My boy in,
yeah, Mike McDaniel.
There you go. I was like, there's a lot of Mike Mix, and I can't remember which one he is, but there you go. You know what the basis of that offense is. I don't know what the basis of this offense is, and it doesn't help that he's a first-time player.
It kind of got the feel of a New England offense where it's just like week-to-week game plan. One week they might be running the hell out the football. The next, it seemed like it kind of got some of that without the Tom Brady, obviously.
But, and not to oversimplify it, but I will for a second here, it does feel like you got C.J. Stroud, Nico Collins, and Joe Mixon. It feels like, hey, you've got some key pieces here. You should be able to figure out an offense around that. Like, if you're a coach worth your salt at all, you should be able to figure that out. That's an oversimplification, but it's like, man, you got, like you said, I feel good about the tools. Is the carpenter good? And we're going to figure that out.
Do y'all feel kind of bad that they just kind of got rid of the Shanahan type of offense a little bit?
Or did they?
Yeah, we don't know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we thought, you know, and I think that's the uncomfortable part of it. It's the not knowing, not being sure. And it's like, all right, we're just going to kind of go out here and have blind faith or blind skepticism or justified skepticism. It depends on just what angle you come at it with. But you can't say that you're going in there knowing, hey, this is what it's going to look like, and I feel good about it.
Well, I got to come back to some more of this audio. I mean, we only just got to the tip of the iceberg. There was some talk about the offensive line and also Ladarius Henderson update as well from Nick Cassera when he was talking with Kay at Adams. We'll get back to more of that.
The football heads loved him some Ladarius Henderson.
Yeah,
man.
I forgot about him, man.
Yes, and that was the thing. Like, that was the thing because I also forgot about him, which is, I mean, he was drafted last year.
National champion Ladarius Henderson. Put some respect
that's
on
right,
the name.
That's right. Michigan Wolverine Ladarius Henderson. But, like, he was drafted, and he was another one of those kind of development types, and you're like, hey, we'll see what this ultimately looks like. And does that, like, where does he also fit in with the possibility of adding to the competition in this offensive line? So we'll circle back to what Nick Cassario has going there. But you are listening to In the Loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's talk about what's popping, including an Astros loss, but what were the things that we saw within that? And also, a well-known and well-respected voice in boxing is returning this weekend. I'll tell you who it is next. Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Let's get into what's popping here on a Thursday. B. Scott in for the OG John Lopez. He out there fishing somewhere. Send him some love if you can. And then Figgy Fig hanging out with us. It is a victory Thursday, though. And if you are watching on the Mokarem Injury Lawyer live streams, whether it's on Twitch or YouTube, that's right. You can see that B. Scott keeping 100 with that H-Town, that Houston Rockets gear on because the Rockets staved off elimination last night.
Let's go. I had to go and look. We were talking about shamelessness earlier in the show. I had to go championship vibes. I ain't saying they're going to win the championship, but after them staving off elimination last night and the vibes were immaculate at Toyota Center, I was feeling good, man. I figure I would commemorate the 30-year anniversary with a nice old T-shirt today.
Yeah, you've been in the building for all three of these playoff games.
That's
like,
right.
How did this one compare to the first two? How did this one feel just generally with the people in the building, especially with the way that this game went? One of the things I was thinking at one point, I was watching, and I'm like, I'm still intrigued, even though this game is starting to look like it's over, like in the second half. I was like, oh, this game has looked like it's over, but I'm still intrigued. I got questions I want answered. I want to see Reed Sheppard. How did the building feel at that moment?
So it felt different in terms of light. It was lighter walking through the concourse and the sunshine beaming through the building as opposed to showing up at 8:30. Like, that was the main difference. And of course, I do think that had some impact on early attendance. Like, we know that the live Houston sports audience is a late arriving crowd, but I think that has in part to do with the personality of the crowd, but also to do with how difficult it is to get to these places and, you know, the traffic issues that we have. And that was more of a factor, I thought, last night than it was, say, in those first two games being as late as they were. But to me, the big thing was the energy far outweighed or was far more important than like the masses, the actual number of people that you saw. Because you could easily take a video, and I'm pretty sure people did, of the crowd early in the game when they're doing their, when they're announcing their starting lineups, and see maybe damn near half empty seats. But whether it's half, three quarters, full, whatever it is, the energy in the atmosphere is playoff atmosphere. It's tense. It's people that are could seem like they're connected to every play. There was a point in the game, you can find this on social media places, where there was somebody that felt like they were screaming for 15 minutes straight, and people were trying to figure out who is this that won't stop. Like, you got people that make noise, but all of us got to catch our breath eventually, right? This person had the lungs of a fish. It was incredible, and even the players were noticing it. So the vibes were immaculate. The energy was incredible. And, of course, the Rockets got the dub against the Dub.
They sure did. So they will force a Game 6, which is on Friday. And courtesy of the Timberwolves getting the L.A. Lakers out the paint, it'll happen at 8 p.m. on ESPN, which sounds like, oh, man, you know, you didn't give us very much, but it could have been 9 or 9:30 or what have you. It will be at 8 p.m. And it'll be on ESPN, because someone earlier was like, if I have to hear Reggie Miller one more again, I'm like, you don't.
It's rough.
You don't in this one, at least.
It's rough. I've been thinking about this, too. Whenever I tweet about Reggie Miller, now that we got a Reggie in our life, I'm like, man, I hope people don't think I'm sending slugs at Reggie. Reggie's my guy. The Reggie that I work with is my guy. I'm very clearly talking about this Reggie. Man, this Reggie is making me mad. Not that one. Not out of Tula. Miller. God, dog. Man, it's rough.
Don't even worry about it, because I also have those same slugs for Reggie Miller. Like, I've been sick of him for years. Anyways, that's not the point.
Yes.
I do want to mention, like, the Timberwolves getting the Lakers out of there, it happened in large part because of one of the most rare things in basketball, which is a dominant Rudy Gobert game in the playoffs.
Wasn't expecting that.
27 and 24 for 39 minutes.
So, look, J.J. Redick's done an incredible job, I think, as a coach overall, like if you just take the totality of his first year with the Lakers. But I do wonder if these last couple of games, a couple of decisions that he's made were really questionable. Like playing the whole same lineup for an entire half is crazy. You don't hear that. I think actually it's something that you've never heard of or seen anybody doing a playoff game. And then, like, defiantly not trying to combat the size of the Minnesota Timberwolves with at least considering a little bit more Jackson Hayes.
He's like, so unplayable, dude.
He is unplayable, but to predetermine it, I thought was negligible.
Agreed.
And maybe you could even say that just the hand that he was dealt, J.J. Redick, that is, in not having a playable big was the main problem. But that was the big issue for them, is that they could not match up with the size, namely last night, Rudy Gobert, and it came to bite the Lakers in the tail in the end.
It was literally the big issue, which honestly is a roster construction issue. And you'll see how if they can kind of make those adjustments. But I know there's a lot of people celebrating, especially when you talk about I know Ant Edwards was having an absolute ball. You hear a little bit from him later on in the program. But he was having a blast getting the Lakers out of there. He was doing his Ant-Man, Spider-Man, Batman, don't matter.
Yeah,
Timberwolves at 5, Timberwolves right? At like, five. That's what he was doing, obviously, getting at Shannon Sharpe and all the Lakers fans that were really excited in that situation. The Astros played yesterday during the day. Unfortunately, they fall. So our guy, A.J. Blueball, was unable to get a victory in his first outing. I don't know how much you were able to watch this. I know you were getting ready for Rockets basketball. But if you were able to see this at all, were you at all impressed with A.J. Blueball? Because I know that he had a little bit of a tough time, and there were two earned runs, a lot of those runs unearned because Jeremy Peña did not cover him in a way that you expect a very good defensive shortstop to cover a rookie pitcher. But I was still rather impressed, and I know Joe Espada was as well with the way that Blueball battled back and was able to, and he only went four innings, but he was able to kind of acquit himself fairly decently considering the circumstances.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those where you have to watch it to appreciate it more. Like, you can't box score watch this game because it is not redeeming. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought that he fought. And honestly, and maybe I'm grading on a curve, I would say, because I'm not expecting this, you know, Spencer Arrighetti-less rotation. Hey, look, Lance McCullers get well soon. Like, whenever you get to this when you get to this part of the rotation, absent of somebody that you feel like you trust, and I'm not saying that you can trust Lance McCullers yet, as long as it's been since he last pitched. But with Blue Ball, I kind of just chalked the loss up and was just hoping that you could get some encouraging signs out of it. And I would say that you got some encouraging signs out of it. Like, the dude gives up 7 runs and only 2 of them are earned. Like you mentioned.
Dude, he would have gotten out of that third if Jeremy Pena. I mean, I feel confident, and maybe this is me stretching too far. I don't know that they absolutely turned that double play where Pena is trying to, like, really shovel this over to second really quickly and just completely miss a second. It was very out of character for him. But even if you just get the lead runner there, you don't have that runner go to third. You don't have the added pressure on Blue Ball, who has not been in a lot of these circumstances. Well, he hasn't been in this circumstance in the major league level. And, I mean, Blue Ball has 6 strikeouts.
Yeah.
In that, like, it does seem like he stabilized in a way where you would not have had, you know, 5 runs in that third inning, even if you'd given up 1 or 2. And that felt like that was very much still a winnable game, considering that you found some runs as you went further on in that one as well.
I thought Blue Ball was fine, given the expectation that you would have of him. It's a shame that, given the fact that he was fine out there, that his defense failed him in a critical moment.
Yeah, but I think you're right. Ultimately, the big thing about this game with Blue Ball for me is seeing if he actually is a guy that you could utilize in a spot start or what have you if you need to in the future.
Yeah.
And I think that was definitely a check mark. The actual result of this one, a 4-7 loss to the Tigers, so you don't get the sweep, was a little unfortunate. But I think that it was still a good outing for him, all things considered. And I was happy that at least, you know, he had his people there, and that he generally had a positive demeanor about it. Even though, you know, he didn't get the win, and obviously he was immediately optioned back to AAA. After the start.
Yeah, and you get L's within a victory, and I think you get some victories within an L. And the promise, I think, of him, and I'm not trying to oversell it, but just feeling like, hey, that's an option. Like, this is not something that we tried and won't feel like we can ever go back to again. If we need to reach into this well and do this again, we can do this again. I do feel like, despite the results, that you felt that way.
97-mile-per-hour average exit velocity on the hits, so that was frustrating for him. He gave up the granny, but
yeah,
still, I think I'm with you there. We've done a lot of it's early with actually, before I get to the it's early, I know it's a baseball tie, but I do want to, because I teased this. I mentioned yesterday about this weekend, Cinco de Mayo weekend, when it comes to boxing.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a good one starting tomorrow evening with a fight that's happening in Times Square. Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, both on a card that's going to be happening in Times Square. And it'll be Jim Lampley, the legendary boxing announcer, who is on the call for it. I believe, I can't remember who actually has it, but I know you know him from HBO Sports fame. But of course, HBO folded up their boxing. And so it was kind of wondering if you would still get Jim Lampley back on calls. They call him into commission for this very unique circumstance. And I'm very excited because I feel like boxing is very high up on the sports where, at least for me personally, the announcer does matter. Because I know people have a lot of conversation about the announcers in football, and I think that they can help. Basketball, we were just talking about, I think that matters a decent amount. But boxing feels like there's a huge, huge portion of this that the announcer brings the energy and the vibe of what's happening in a way that's different than any other sport. So I'm excited to have Lampley back for this one at the very least.
Well, and especially since it seemed like after HBO shuttered its boxing.
2018. Didn't even realize it's been that long.
Oh, I thought it was 2020. I thought it was like a COVID thing. So it's been even longer than I thought.
No, this was, I don't want to have the conversation about HBO, their parent companies, and how they
move. Right. Well, yes. And I'm familiar because I was doing a little work with Warner Brothers, and that got a little
complicated. So I don't even have to tell
complicated.
You.
Well, you could, but it was even complicated for me as somebody that was involved in getting checks from them. But long story short, the part that I love about this is that it kind of the door has been reopened, and I agree with everything that you said specific to boxing with announcers. My thing is the legendary announcers, and maybe this is me getting sensitive the older that I get, but we need to preserve and keep these guys around for as long as we can. Even some of the ones that I don't like. Like, I'm not a Brent Musburger guy, but I was all for keeping Brent Musburger around for as long as you could keep him around. I saw Marv Albert on Mike Breen acknowledged Marv Albert at a Knicks game about a week or so ago as the greatest NBA play-by-play guy of all time, and I agree with that. Like, having guys like that around, and Lampley falls along those lines for boxing. Preserving those guys for as long as you possibly can. The older I get, the more I'm into that.
Yeah, real sentimental. We getting sappy That made me think about Hubie and that. Anyways,
yeah, Hubie, yeah, that's another one.
I love me some Hubie, but yeah, I'm gonna be very excited. I'll be stuck to the screen. When the 76-year-old Emmy winner Jim Lampley gets to call some boxing again tomorrow. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. I promise I'll get back around to some of the stock of it's early when it comes to MLB, what that typically means. I will circle back around to that. I promise. In the loop on this Thursday. But coming up next, we were talking a little bit about it, but let's dig back into Game 5, a huge, huge victory that staves off elimination for the Rockets. Did Game 5 make you feel more confident about the Rockets' chances in Game 6, or was it just a one-off? How much of this is sustainable? We will answer that question next.